Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, President Joe Biden makes immigration a day one priority. If there was a single issue that defined the presidency of Donald Trump, it was his hard line on immigration, from the Muslim ban to child separation to the wall. On his first day in office, Joe Biden made it clear to the country and the world that he's supporting a very different vision of America when it comes to foreigners. The new president immediately took a series of executive actions that revoked some of his predecessor's policies. And the Biden White House has already sent a comprehensive immigration bill to Congress. To help us understand President Biden's immigration priorities, I talked with Michael Shear, White House correspondent for The New York Times. He's the author of Border Wars, Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration. Michael, among the many priorities the Biden administration has for its first 100 days or whatever, immigration is right up there. Why is that such an important issue for the White House now?
So I think for a couple of reasons, maybe the biggest one is that reversing President Trump's really harsh immigration tactics fits squarely in the new president's, President Biden's, reasons for being president in the first place. Remember, he said at the very beginning that he wanted to repair the soul of the nation. And while there are other issues for sure that fit into that category, racial justice and all sorts of things, this question of who are we as Americans and how do we relate to the rest of the world? And if you look at President Trump's kind of immigration agenda writ large, it was essentially to shut the country off from the rest of the world. And, you know, obviously not in policy, but then also with rhetoric and with the sort of, and so this was, I think it fits for Joe Biden. He wants to take the country in a different direction and send a different message.
So given the fact that 4 years of Trump's efforts to shut it down, how difficult is it going to be for Biden to reverse course?
I think it's going to be pretty difficult. I think there are some things that can quickly be turned off. The new president did that in the first day. He canceled the Muslim ban. Remember the travel from people from Muslim countries and some countries in Africa. He halted construction at least temporarily of the border wall. So there are things that can be turned off pretty quickly. But remember, one of the things that President Trump did and, you know, aided very ably by Stephen Miller, the sort of architect of his immigration agenda, was to really try to change fundamentally the culture of these agencies that oversee all of these policies. So it wasn't just that you issue an executive order. It was completely changing the thought process of how do we deal with refugees? How do we deal with asylum seekers at the border? I mean, for example, something little that people don't recognize is that you've got this sort of core of government interviewers that have to interview every person that comes in seeking asylum. They rewrote the questions. I mean, they literally took the manual that had existed for decades of how do these people interview a potential asylum seeker, and they rewrote it to be much more aggressive and to essentially lead them to deny many more of these asylum seekers. So, you know, Joe Biden's not going to be able to just wave a magic wand. He has to go back in and like rewrite all of that material.
And how long could that take, for example? I mean, not only rewriting those questions, but what about Dreamers? People who've been tagged for deportation, what happens to them?
Well, so I think President Biden can put the brakes for a time on those deportations.
With the executive order.
Yes. At the moment, given what the Supreme Court had said at the last time they took a look at the DACA program, which is the program that protects the Dreamers, you know, from deportation, that was put in place by President Obama. President Trump tried to eliminate that program, but failed, essentially. So that program is still there. That will protect them for the time being. There are still legal attacks going on. The attorney general in Texas is still trying to get rid of that program. So it's kind of on shaky ground. I think if you were a dreamer today, you would be, you know, somewhat satisfied that you've got a new president and you know, is going to be, you know, protecting you. But there's still the long-term question of, I've always got that hanging over my head that I could someday, there could someday be a problem. And I think that's where the question of legislation comes in. The president, President Biden, has put forth a very large sweeping legislative proposal on his first day in office that Congress will take up. And if that were to pass both houses and be signed by President Biden, that would solve the Dreamer problem permanently. That would give Dreamers and others who are sort of here undocumented a path to getting to being permanent, you know, sort of residents of this country. But the question of whether that legislation is going to pass is a big one.
What about the border wall? I realize that construction is going to stop, but is there going to be any effort to remove it?
You know, we've asked that question. I think they've sort of dodged the question at the moment. Part of the pause in construction, they say, is to evaluate both the legality of, remember, Donald Trump did a whole lot of tricks to get the money to build the wall, diverting the money from federal military uses. And so they're looking at that. You know, the Trump administration did some stuff with contracting where they contracted out private companies to build parts of the wall. They're looking at that. Look, I think most of the wall that Trump built was a replacement of an existing wall. In some cases, kind of a low wall that they made higher. In some cases, a kind of ratty, falling apart wall that they put up a new wall. So it may well be that the Biden administration says, look, we're not going to tear this stuff down. Billions of dollars was spent, you know, putting it up, but they're clearly not going to build another inch. They're not going to build another inch of the wall.
What about the Department of Homeland Security and its 100-day pause on deportation? What is that going to mean?
So, you know, that's the one that I am most curious about how it plays out for a couple of reasons. The conservatives will tell you that they think a pause on deportations will encourage a huge rush to the border from, you know, Central American countries and elsewhere, because people will assume that if they get to the United States, they step that foot into the United States, that for 100 days they can't be deported and that they will just disappear into the country. That's a risk. I mean, I think in the Biden people understand that. Helping them out on that is that we also have COVID restrictions that the Biden people are leaving in place. So there's fewer people that can get in anyway, not because of the harsh policies of the Trump administration, but just because of COVID restrictions. The other question, though, and I don't want to ramble too much, but the DHS is filled with people who are essentially police officers, right? They're ICE agents or they're Border Patrol agents, and they have a culture. And the culture of those parts of DHS are aggressive, wanting to, you know, root out the bad guys and arrest them. And so for 4 years, they were unleashed. For 4 years, President Trump said, go at it. You know, every illegal immigrant you find, you arrest and you deport, you know, no matter how bad or not bad, you know. And so they were arresting people with misdemeanors and, you know, essentially who hadn't done anything other than be here without paper, without documents. So the question I have is, can you put that genie back in the bottle? Can, you know, if Biden says to all of these kind of gung-ho agents, you know, okay, well, now no more deportations, you're not going to arrest people with misdemeanors, there's likely to be a real culture clash inside the department between, you know, these sort of gung-ho agencies and the new leadership at the department. And so I think that's going to be worth watching.
What can Biden do to change that culture? Can he simply order them to follow his instructions? And will they?
You know, yes, I think mostly he of course can give the order and will. They've already started changing what they call the enforcement memorandums, right? That sort of lay out for the Department of Homeland Security, here are the priorities. When Barack Obama was in office, they had shifted those priorities to basically say, if you're an agent and you bust down a door and you find a criminal, and then in that same house, there's a person who has done nothing wrong, but happens to be an illegal immigrant. Don't arrest that person, right? Because that's not who you're after. You're after the bad guy, and we want you to keep priority on the bad guy. Trump obviously reversed that. Biden is going back to it. So there is, you know, the bureaucracy, Diane. I mean, you've been around. Like, they do ultimately they shift to the direction of the commander in chief. The question is, do they all shift? You know, it's funny, you know, we all sort of talk about the resistance to Trump, right? That existed. I mean, there were people inside the government who didn't want to do what Trump was doing. Likewise, there will be a resistance to Biden. There will be a resistance. There will be a group of people, and I think CPB, the Border Patrol, and ICE are among them, who many of them will resist some of this stuff, and there will be clashes.
Now, what happens to those children who were separated from their parents? How will that issue be dealt with?
So I think it's fair to say that, you know, there won't be any more additional sort of mass separations at the border. The Obama and Biden people have always said, look, in very limited cases, there have, even before Trump came around, there were people, if a border agent thought that an adult traveling with the child had kidnapped the child, you know, there were times that every now and then you could be separated. But the kind of mass separations that Trump did are not going to go forward. Then the question is, how do you deal with the ones that were already separated? And what Biden has said he will do is to immediately create a high-level commission charged with bringing those kids back together. Now, I've talked to a lot of the people, you know, in senior positions in Biden's orbit, and what they keep saying is that's going to be hard. I mean, they're committed to doing it. They're going to have high-level people on it. But so many of these people, the adults, the parents, have already long been deported back to Guatemala, back to Honduras. Finding them in those war-racked countries, linking them back up to the kids is going to be a nightmare.
And where are those children now?
Well, in some cases, in many cases, they may be with a relative or a friend. So the process, even before Trump came along, was that if you did have what they used to call a UAC, an unaccompanied child, because there was a period during Obama where they were just coming up by themselves. The parents weren't there, so there was nobody to separate. So they had this whole system where an unaccompanied child would be quickly taken from the border, put in one of these homes that's run. It's kind of equivalent to an adoption facility, but it's a home for children. They have schools, but then they're only supposed to stay there for a couple of months, and then they're supposed to go to a friend or a relative or, you know, somewhere else, placed in some kind of home. And so many of them, that's where they are. They're outside the system, but kind of without their parents, right? Like, that's the, and I mean, I've got two kids. I mean, it's a nightmare. So the Biden people are going to try to reverse that the best they can, although I think they know it's a challenge.
Then there's comprehensive immigration legislation, which Biden has apparently already delivered to Congress. So politically speaking, is that a good idea to start with something so controversial?
Well, you know, count me among the skeptics here, you know, in terms of whether this is going to happen. Biden was under a lot of pressure to do this on day one, in part because of the history with Barack Obama. Barack Obama in 2007 and 8 on the campaign trail had promised that he would do something similar in his first 100 days. Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff at the time, and others talked him out of it for exactly what you just said, Diane. They said, don't do this. This is too controversial. It's too, you know, focus on health care instead, which, as we know, that's what he did. And he got health care and all of the rest. By the time they got back around to immigration in the Obama years, the House had flipped to Republican control. They no longer could pass immigration. They passed it in the Senate and then it died in the House. And so, you know, immigration activists have been angry for 12 years, you know, that that was the way that all played. So the pressure on Biden to come right out the gate and say, you know, I'm not going to make the same mistake that Barack Obama did. You know, he has the Senate and the House now. He should do this. That said, boy, you know, talk about a hot button issue. And, you know, President Biden talked about unity in his speech, and that's great. But like, this is not the way to reach out at an olive branch to Republicans by offering an immigration bill like this.
And the centerpiece of this bill is apparently to grant legal status to lots of undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, this is one of those areas where estimates, it's only estimates, right? We estimate that there's about 11 million undocumented immigrants in the country. This would essentially grant a temporary status for like 5 years to most of those people. They basically would sort of be like a DACA person is now. They would be able to have a legal work permit so they could work legally, and they wouldn't have threat of deportation. So if they, you know, they could actually interact with a police officer and not be worried that they would be deported, but they wouldn't have any, they wouldn't get benefits, they wouldn't get, and you know, have the benefit, they couldn't vote, all of that. And then after 5 years, they could apply for a green card, which is permanent status in the country. And then after 3 more years, they could become potentially citizens. Now, they have to pay taxes. You can't get any, you know, any criminal activity if you're convicted of even, you know, a relatively minor crime, you know, that makes you ineligible. So there's some protections there. But boy, get used to the word amnesty, because that's what the Republicans are going to throw at this. You know, I talked for about a half hour the other day with Stephen Miller on his last full day in office. And I mean, it's clear he is going to lead the fight to kill this. I mean, he and others, but like from the outside, the talk radio, Fox News, the internet, Drudge, all these places. I mean, there are, you know, the sort of conservative anti-immigrant machine is going to roar to life, and it's going to be a big battle.
And so you believe Stephen Miller and Donald Trump have so invested in this idea of making sure these immigrants don't stay here that Congress, members of the Republican Congress, are going to go along with that rather than with Biden's approach?
Well, I think we have to see. But I mean, one thing that is telling, I think, and I went back and looked at this, in 2013, Barack Obama managed to pass a very substantially similar immigration plan through the U.S. Senate. It had some things that Biden isn't yet offering. So it had a lot of money for border security. And so that pulled some Republicans along. But interestingly enough, there were 14 Republicans, I think, in the U.S. Senate who voted for it, right? That's a huge number. You think about our divided country, 14 Republicans who voted for Barack Obama's immigration plan. You know how many of them are still in the Senate? 3. So, you know, there are people like John McCain, obviously passed away, Jeff Flake, Bob Corker. You know, in other words, these were the sort of so-called moderate, you know, sometimes not even moderate Republicans, but just they were Republicans that had a kind of took a different approach to immigrants and immigration and kind of who we are as a people. But so many of them have been replaced by much more Trumpy kinds of senators. And of course, the same things happened in the House as well. You know, the sort of more moderate, more centrist people have left. So, you know, again, I'm cynical. I'm a reporter. That's what I'm supposed to be. But like, boy, I think it feels really hard to see how Biden manages to convince that many senators to come along with him in our current environment.
More from Michael Shear when we come back. Here's the rest of my conversation with Michael Shear. He's White House correspondent for the New York Times. He's the author of the book Border Wars: Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration. Let's go back to the wall for a minute. How much of the wall did Donald Trump actually get built?
So just a little context for your listeners. There's about 2,000 miles of border between the United States and Mexico, right? Donald Trump, initially when he was a candidate, promised to build a wall from sea to shining sea across the whole 2,000 miles. Never got close to that. What he built was somewhere between 250 to 300 miles of wall of that 2,000 miles. Now, again, though, he claimed it's new wall. Almost all of that, like when you think about, for example, some of the urban areas in San Diego, those have had walls for a long time. I mean, if you go down to Tijuana and you look back, like you would have seen walls even before Donald Trump got there. Some of them were very old. Some of them weren't as big and beautiful as Donald Trump thought they should be. So a lot of that 250 miles is not like some new thing. It's just a different wall than had been there before.
But wasn't there a lot of landscape destruction to build what he built? And will that be restored?
You know, I don't know the answer to the question about the restoring. They did, you know, sort of when they were kind of going through, there were some parts of the border which had sort of natural barriers, you know, sort of hills and, you know, what have you. They sort of blasted through some of those because they wanted to put the big wall up there. I don't think you can really restore a lot of that. I mean, I suppose you can plant more trees and the like, but I think that unfortunately is probably low down on the list.
So now I want to, if I may, turn to the question of impeachment.
Ah, yes.
And the fact that Nancy Pelosi has announced she will send that article of impeachment to the Senate, I gather, on Monday. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. Yes, exactly.
And Mitch McConnell wants more time. How is that going to play out in this new effort at cooperation between the varying sides of the Senate and the House?
So, you know, one thing I learned, I spent four and a half months up on Capitol Hill during the last impeachment, helping out our coverage there. One thing I learned from that experience is that it's really hard to predict what these guys do because they always have some trick up their sleeve. But here's my guess. The Constitution says that the trial must start very quickly after the article is sent over. However, there's some leeway there, you know, because the trial has to start, but that doesn't mean that they have to immediately be in the well of the Senate making oral arguments right away. The trial can start, and then they still be negotiating things like whether there will be witnesses, filing legal briefs on each side. Remember, in the first impeachment a year ago, there was a lot of that, you know, each side filing legal briefs, right? Although Trump's were legal briefs, maybe in air quotes, but here's what I think may happen, and I think to keep your eye on. President Biden and his allies on the Hill want his cabinet to be confirmed as quickly as humanly possible. We're in the midst of ungodly crises, health crises, economic crises, you know, military stuff going on all over the world. I mean, there's stuff, right? Mitch McConnell wants to delay this a little bit. That's his preference, to go to mid-February. My guess is that over the next few, you know, days, what we're going to find is that those interests actually converge, where Chuck Schumer is going to say to Mitch McConnell, well, okay, fine, we will delay the trial till February 15th or something. But in the meantime, you have to commit to giving all of the key people that President Biden has nominated a hearing and a vote, you know, kind of thing, which, is probably a good trait for, you know, for this president. It pushes the craziness off for another month, and it gives Biden a chance to get, you know, his footing and the administration that he wants off the bat. That's just a guess. I don't, you know, I know that they're talking about that kind of thing, whether it actually happens. I mean, you know, they often, the thing that seems to make the most sense often doesn't seem to happen in Congress, right? So, But that's my guess.
So if that is the case, what kinds of witnesses would you assume might be brought in to testify against the impeachment of Donald Trump?
That's a good question. I mean, part of it will depend on how broad a case that the Democrats want to make. You could imagine the article is the article. So one question is, do they argue that he incited insurrection simply that morning with the speech that he gave, before the marchers, marched up to the Capitol and then rioted, which is in some ways the simplest and most direct example, right? I mean, he said things that were basically like, go to the Capitol now. But you could imagine a different case being made, which is if you wanted to go back to Election Day and say that from Election Day forward, the president's attempts to sow doubt about the election, to sow doubt about the legitimacy of Biden's presidency, to rile people up about members of Congress, to, make the case about, that somehow Vice President Pence could have, changed the outcome during that January 6th meeting. There were all sorts of things that you could talk about that could legitimately be clumped into incitement, right? Donald Trump did all these things over the course of 2 months, and all of that taken together incited the riot that, climaxed in the riot that happened. So depending on what they do, then the president's defense team, if he finds a lawyer willing to defend him, would have to then, potentially respond to a much broader case than the narrow case.
And that would presumably take longer?
I would think so. I mean, it sort of depends. All of these calculations, the lawmakers like to claim that they're high-minded about this, but it's all decided based on politics. And so, the Republicans and the Democrats both are going to decide what's more advantageous for us politically. Is it more advantageous to have a bunch of witnesses? Is it more advantageous to just, go through this thing as quickly as possible, have a couple of days of arguments and then vote? I don't think we know that yet. I just don't know that either side has sort of figured it out.
Is it more advantageous to Republicans to have Donald Trump impeached and out of the way for 2024?
I think that there are many Republicans who think that, yes, it is better to excise him from the party in a more both symbolic way that they can say, like, we did this, but also in a practical way that if, they would vote to say you cannot ever hold public office. But I think, you don't forget that Trumpism wasn't just Trump over these last 4 years. Trumpism was 73 or 4 million people who voted for Trump. Even if you feel like some of those people sort of naturally kind of float back to regular Republican Party, there's a huge swath of really hardcore supporters of President Trump in this country and in their districts and in their states, right, for the senators. So I think it's a calculation for them. Some of them may say, oh, that calculation's easy. Let's get rid of Donald Trump forever. And let's get back to business, to being regular Republicans. Or some of them may say, you know what? I can't be seen in my state as trying to get rid of Donald Trump, not because I really care about Donald Trump, but because I've got 80% of my voters who love the guy and who still love the guy and who will revolt against me if I do that. So it's not, I think it depends on the senator, and they're each going to have to make an individual calculation.
Last question for you. What chance do you think President Biden has of passing comprehensive immigration legislation where so many others have failed?
I think it's going to be tough, but I think that he starts with a reservoir of goodwill among a lot of people because of his history in the Senate, because of his relationships. And I think it's gonna depend on, you know, whether, you know, he and the Republicans find a way that they can each back off of their extreme positions. I think each side, the left, you know, there are people on the left in American politics who want to, you know, defund ICE and get rid and open the fling the border open. And there are people on the right who are like Miller and Trump. And I think both sides are going to have to come together. And I, you know, maybe if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say maybe there's a 30% chance that he passes it. But, you know, I think we'll have to see. Maybe that improves over time.
Michael, thank you so much.
This is great. I'm so happy to be on your show. So thanks so much for having me.
That was Michael Shear. He's White House correspondent for the New York Times. He's the author of the book Border Wars: Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration. That's all for today. Thanks to those of you who've written in to let us know what's on your mind. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Benton Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Thanks for listening, all. Please stay safe. Take care of yourself and those you love. I'm Diane Rehm.